All right, we are back on the Tea Talk podcast. We're wrapping up the Shriners Open, I believe. Was that what was happening last week? I don't know. Kevin Na was just walking in putts from all over. I didn't even look at what tournament it was. This guy made 7,000 feet of putts. It was obviously a fun week to watch golf on the TV. It was nice weather, so I hope you were all playing it. And it sounds like my co-host was actually on the course this weekend. Scott McLeod sitting across from me in the studio. How are you today?
I'm doing great. And yeah, I managed to get out on the golf course a little bit, enjoy some of this fall weather, and I was making a couple of putts myself. Not as many as Kevin Na, of course. I don't think anyone made as many as Kevin Na, and nobody has made as many as him footage-wise in 72 holes on the PGA Tour before. That was incredible. It really, really was.
It was insane. 18. I didn't watch a lot of golf. I've been busy, a lot of house stuff. I'm trying to play, and it's been sporadic, but I'm catching up. But I did catch the last bit of this tournament, and I did see that putt that he made to get into the playoff where he... That putt was maybe 3-4 inches off the face, and this guy's walking in, and it's not a 6-footer. This thing was like 12 feet center cup. He knew it right away. This guy's got swagger. This guy was hated for years on the PGA Tour. He played slow. He had the yips. Nobody liked him. He got all this heat on social media. And I think over the last couple of years, people have just really started to love this guy and his whole character. And I think what we're talking about a lot on the podcast today is he clearly has fun out there.
Yeah, and really, you know, PGA Tour is an entertainment product. And when we're watching TV, you know, a lot of people talk about golf being boring. Mm-hmm. They talk about guys just hitting driver, wedge, or whatever. Na puts on a show. I mean, he's a little bit of a showman. I mean, whether it's recoils or fist bumps or walking in putts, and I think that appeals to a lot of people for a lot of reasons, and it makes it fun to watch. And I found myself, you know, glued to the couch watching this thinking, man, is this guy going to, you know, melt at any point? But you know, he made a triple on 10, but he came right back and made a whole bunch of birdies and held off Patrick Cantlay there, like you said, worked his way into that playoff, and it was one of the most incredible putting performances I've ever seen. In fact, Justin Ray, who you know, is known on Twitter for doing a lot of stats, I think he's 15th hole now, but used to work for the Golf Channel, he said Na was the first player to win a full field PGA Tour event with negative strokes gained tee to green since the tour began keeping the stats 15 years ago. So what that means for people who are not familiar with strokes gained is the fact that he hit it like crap from
like
tee to green, and he gained over 14 strokes on the field based on his putting alone. So this is a guy who won it clearly with his flat stick, and boy, that made it fun to watch.
I love it. That's my game. That's my, I mean, I you've played with me.
I have not.
No one's ever going to call me a ball striker.
Yep.
I don't usually miss it far, but I don't. I just scramble away, and then I make a ton of putts. And that's kind of – if my putter's going, I'm going to score, and that's about it. But he's kind of started a different conversation where, as we're talking about, golf's supposed to be fun. We've talked about the President's Cup being boring. If this guy's on that President's Cup team, the fist bumps, the walking it. Can you imagine he walks in a putt to, like, win a match and just, like, the steam coming off of – whoever's playing on the international team, it'd be awesome. It's a good time to get hot because this is when they're a lot of these guys that are on the outside, they're hoping for captain's pick. This is the time. He is good buddies with Tiger Woods. Who knows? Maybe he's a captain's pick coming up for the President's Cup.
Yeah, we're less than a month away. The week of November 4th, the captains will make their pick. They've each got four each to make, and I think he's making a case for himself for sure. I don't think he can really be ignored. And you know, it's matches. You know, there's match play, and a putter, you know, makes for a great equal for a lot of things. You can, like you said, you can hit it all over the yard, but if you can make putts, you can be an equal to basically anyone out there, and you can be a giant killer. So, you know, if he gets picked, they're going to be able to stack him up against just about anyone.
Absolutely. Look, other couple stories coming out of the weekend, positive stories. Graham Dillette returned to the PGA Tour. Didn't matter what happened with
Graham
this week. He obviously did not make the cut, but he's back on the tour. He's knocking off the rust, as he said. He's looking at the positives. He is playing next week or this week at the Houston
Open,
which is awesome. Happy to see him. But back-to-back is when you really get to know if that back can hold up, because back injuries, they kill you, they linger, they go on and on. We look at Tiger in the past. You know, you can name all the guys that have gone down to back injuries. So awesome to see Graham back out there, and he's going to play again this week. And it's just, it's nice to see Canadians out whenever they can. Hadwin out there again this week. This guy's made a ton of money in the first couple weeks. Just take the year off at this point. Holy moly. He's coming for a win, I think, again this year.
Yeah, he had a, you know, a second there at Safeway, and you know, a three-way tie for fourth this past weekend, picked up almost 300,000. As I noted on Twitter, in two starts, he's now 36 under for eight rounds, takes him over $1 million in earnings for the season so far in two starts, which is almost 50% of what he earned last year in a campaign that was a really solid campaign where he had five top tens, finished 52nd in the FedEx Cup. He's now worked his way inside the top 50 in the world rankings, and he's certainly, you know, putting himself on the radar for Ernie Els to look at for a captain's pick as well.
That'd be awesome. Get some Canadians in there. That'd be sweet. Corey Connors has been playing a little bit and hopes to get picked. A little bit of a slower start for Corey Connors in this wraparound season, which I'm not going to talk about my hatred for, but it is there. Just want to let everybody know we have a couple different segments coming up this week. We got an interview in just a short few moments with Ryan Barath from Golf WRX. But after that, we're going to do a segment called our Birdies to Bogeys segment. We have a mailbox segment. People have been sending in questions all week. We're looking forward to that. And maybe a little tip at the end. So stick around to hear the tip from the coach himself. He's going to help you play real well to finish up the end of the year if you're struggling with some things. Before we do, we still want to go over a couple other things happening in the world of golf. Former podcast guest we've had on here, Aaron Cockerell, playing out on the Challenge Tour, filter tour into the European Tour, playing real well right now, finished seventh last week. This kid is on fire. We're hoping this guy gets on the European Tour soon.
Yeah, we really are. It's a second top 10 finish in a row, so you know, he's certainly coming into form. It's not easy to go out there and run around the world and play all these different venues, you know, Morocco this week, and you know, he was in France last week.
I don't know how they afford it, man. That's like insane travel.
Well, travel's a little bit easier over there for flights. I mean, it's a little different from regulation-wise as far as over here, but it's definitely not cheap. And you know, he documented that on the show when he was on the show before he went to the Kenya Open early in the season. So if you want to hear what his story is about, go back and look through our catalog and listen to that podcast with Aaron, and we certainly wish him the best of luck.
It looks like he's having a blast though. That's the key.
It does.
He's posting on social media, he's traveling, he's showing his travels, he's
totally
living it up. So a lot of these guys, they do this and they don't realize this isn't forever. Aaron, it does seem like he realizes, yeah, my goal is to play golf at some point on the big tours and make a career out of it. But if it doesn't work, I'm living it up while I'm out here. And
yeah,
that's,
he's having that.
That's
he's,
what it should be.
Yeah, he's having that opportunity to get out there, do that. And you know what? We're seeing more Canadians as well look at that option that he's doing. I mean, he's a guy who went to the European Tour Q School, got limited status in the European Tour Tour, and then also has got the status on the Challenge Tour. And that's what you get when you go to that Q School. So
the Brooks Koepka method.
Exactly. Because right now, on this side of the ocean, you're only got a Q School that you can get access to the Korn Ferry Tour. You can't get access to the PGA Tour. So this gives you an option to get two tours access. And as a result of it, we're seeing a lot more Canadians. And I noted this week, there are two first stage qualifiers for the European Tour this week. And one of them alone in France, there are 13 Canadians in France getting ready to play first stage there. And the other one in Portugal, I believe there were three Canadians in the field for that one. So this has definitely become an option for a lot of players to try and go over, play in Europe. They realize, you know, what the costs are going to be relative, you know, playing the Korn Ferry over here. But, you know, if they don't get European Tour status, they can at least get Challenge Tour status and maybe work their way up to the European Tour even during the season. So it's a different way to go about it. But as you said, Brooks Koepka has used this model and people are going, you know what, that might work. That might be a better way to do it. It might.
It might work. It worked for him.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess.
Yeah, it kind of worked out. So, yeah, it's definitely becoming an option for more players, and we're certainly seeing a lot more international field over there. And for Aaron Cockerell, it's working out quite well for him so far.
Speaking of Brooks Koepka, for a guy that does not practice, he's posting a lot of practice lately. I know he had knee surgery, a little scope, whatever. Brooks, you were full of it back then. You practice. I'm getting a little bit over Brooks shtick.
Shtick. Yeah, I mean, he had stem cell treatment in that knee, so that's why he all of a sudden says, you know, but he could have revealed that before of why he wasn't practicing or whatever, but, you know, whatever.
I'm just over it. Yeah. You know, whatever. Brooks does a lot of good things for golf, too, but, like, just stop trying to be this tough guy. You don't need to be. It's silly.
Yeah.
Last thing, Canadian-wise, Brooke Henderson. This, like,
yeah.
Just another top 20.
Yep. Easy stuff.
For all I know, she played with one shoe on. You know, like, she's so good. Her bad, she's probably mad this week. She finished 16th, and she's probably like, oh, that's a horrible week. Worst weeks of my year. Like, she's just so good. I don't know. There's nothing that we can say about Brooke that we haven't already said. This girl's, she's the pride of Canada right now, and she's amazing, and we're just so proud of her. And go back and listen to that podcast. But one thing we've been talking about for weeks and weeks on end on this podcast, it's kind of been our motto, is golf is supposed to be fun. We love golf. Make it fun. Do anything to make it fun. Stop taking yourself so seriously. We have a guest on the podcast that's his MO, Ryan Barath from Golf WRX. He just really believes that golf should be about having fun, and golf can be for everyone. It's not as expensive as you think it is, and we're really excited to have him on the podcast and get his thoughts on this. He has his own podcast on Golf WRX. We're going to talk about that as well, but for now we're going to go over and chat with Ryan about his take on the golf industry, where it's at right now, and then when we come back we're going to do a new segment called Birdies versus Bogeys. It's a new segment kind of going over, would you rather pick this one or pick that one, did you like it, did you not? Wait for it. You'll enjoy it. So, without further ado, Ryan Barath.
All right. We want to welcome into the podcast Ryan Barath, who's the writer and digital content creation lead for GolfWRX.com. He's also the host of the On Spec podcast. I've known Ryan for a little while, and he's always got a great take on all sorts of aspects of golf. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So Ryan, I've been following your podcast of late, the On Spec podcast, and you know, you've had a lot of conversations about, you know, golf courses. You're a guy who really likes sort of the spirit of the game and different aspects of it that are maybe not, you know, I won't say is high reaching. You know, some people are aspirational and trying to do certain things with golf, but yours is more focused on the roots of the game. And why don't you tell people a little bit about your background in the golf industry and sort of how it shaped you?
Yeah. So I grew up as a Muni kid, kind of rural. And so I just played the closest golf course to me. And then I was lucky enough to move into the city and just went to school, lived in Hamilton. And with that, they had a bunch of municipal golf courses, which is something I was never really introduced to before. Everything that was around me was like privately owned, but it was country kind of golf courses and very affordable. My first membership, for example, was $300 for a year. I think my parents really enjoyed paying for it because it was cheaper than babysitting.
seems to be a theme on the show sometimes.
Yeah. And started working in the golf industry and just played a lot of Muni golf. And then I got really lucky there was a couple courses near me at the time when I was working in Hamilton, working big box retail at Golf Town, that one of the local courses that was private really needed members. So we all got in, or we were all in our early 20s, and we all joined for like $1,500. And it was kind of the first taste of like real, true, like country club. We weren't necessarily the most welcome people around. It kind of felt sometimes, but it was a great experience to be around that. And we all respected the atmosphere. It was just a very different something than what we were used to. And then from there, I've always been a big proponent of like just public and accessible golf. Cause I loved being close to municipal golf. And when I started, I met my wife in Hamilton in the golf industry at the time and got a house eventually near one of the public golf courses that I started playing when I went to school. And I just fell in love with the idea of like golf is just right there for everybody. And don't get me wrong, I love the country club atmosphere. I love being able to go to a golf course with no tee times and wing around in 3 hours, and conditions are amazing. But I know that that's not always the case for a lot of people. And I think that that's the perception for a lot of people, that that's what golf is, but it really isn't. Cause I've played with anyone from people that are over the age of 80 to just juniors that are at the Muni, and it's just a lot of fun.
So for you, I mean, you know, you come from the equipment side of it as well. We should really kind of mention that. You mentioned big box, but, you know, at heart, I guess you were a club maker, you've been a tech rep. So all those things have exposed you to a lot of people in golf. Are these some of the same ideas that you see more and more in those audiences as well? You know, these are not always people that are, you know, aspiring to be at private country clubs, but, you know, they're sort of the real golfers of Canada.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I got to see a lot of being from the equipment side and, you know, doing demo days and doing those kind of things was the fact that, you know, I'm lucky to be on the cutting edge of what golf equipment is. I get to see it, I get to test it. But I'm also just the first person to go out and grab like a my I got a I think a 40 I think 40 probably 40-year-old set of blades and some persimmon laminated woods, fairway woods, an old blade putter and a Sunday bag and go out and play a 5,000-yard muni. Because it's just a different way to enjoy the game, and being around that, like I love the idea of how regular equipment can help average golfers. I see it every time I go play a muni and get paired up with three random people, and see how their games have improved, and see them using big cavity back irons. And sometimes, you know, after a few holes, and someone's got an adjustable driver, I'll go, "Have you ever adjusted that thing?" And then they'll go, "No, I just bought it." And so I'll say, "This is kind of my specialty. I can help you with this thing." And you know, a couple wrench clicks later, and they're hitting it straighter. So the golf gear out there can definitely help the average golfer in general. But I also know that there's a huge amount of people that, like myself, who kind of see it both ways and enjoy kind of going retro sometimes too.
Is that something a lot of people are missing out on? I mean, I know what my thoughts are on that, but, you know, are you seeing that where people, you know, there's a perception that everybody's got to have the latest, you know, $700 driver, but, you know, and people will say, well, golf's too expensive because I've got to have the latest and greatest, but that's not really the case, right? I mean, there's a lot of product that's out there on the market that, if fitted properly, will certainly suffice and get somebody to enjoy the game.
Oh, 100%. And like for me, it's like a huge talking point for me all the time. It really like grinds my gears. You know, I could start down that rabbit hole.
Thank you,
Because
Peter Griffin.
golf,
We appreciate that.
yes, thank no problem. The idea that golf is expensive is ridiculous. And I think it's when people it's the perception when again when you see commercials and all that stuff, but I think if I was to be your average car buyer, I would say cars are expensive because I'm watching Mercedes commercials all day long. And watching YouTube videos on Aston Martins, right? So, if that's the only way you perceive it, of course you're going to see it that way. But in this being, you know, you guys are obviously Canadian. I'm Canadian. I've mentioned this analogy before, but playing hockey is way more expensive, and cost per time spent actually playing the game is astronomical in Canada. And if you were to say that you were going to close down an arena in a small town, people would chain themselves to that arena and lose their minds. But if you, for some reason, you tell people you're going to close a golf course and people kind of shrug their shoulders, you can still buy a junior membership at, again, the Muni in Hamilton. A junior membership is about $450. That gives you access every single day. Every time the sun is up, you can go out and play. And you can go to a big box retailer. You can browse Kijiji. I've talked about this 100 times about buying used golf equipment and finding good value in used golf equipment because I love it too. I was someone who grew up having to buy used golf equipment, and I still do it now because I just love the hunt. And now, when someone tells me that golf's too expensive, I'm like, I can go right now on Kijiji. I could probably buy you or Craigslist or eBay or whatever it happens to be. Golf Avenue, which is a, I guess, Canadian company, no free ads. You can buy stuff. You can buy a whole set for $500. You could get a membership for probably $1,000, and the next thing you know, you can play golf every single waking moment of the summer for $1,500. And you can't tell me that you don't get better value playing golf than you would playing hockey for a child or for anybody else, because it doesn't have to be expensive. You don't have to play these crazy rate like private club, country club for a day fee golf courses to enjoy the game itself.
You're 100% correct. And the one thing you touched on there is the hunt. Let's talk about the hunt, because if you're golf obsessed, you never stop. The hunt never stops. Yeah, we might be happy with our equipment, but and we might have the latest and greatest, but we're always looking for that one thing, the one piece that maybe got away, or the thing that somebody doesn't actually know what it's worth. So, I mean, maybe you can tell us, what was the one thing that you found used that you still can't believe you picked it up for the price you got it for?
This is a fun, kind of funny story. Kind of started my obsession with like blade irons. So I was working at big box retail. Someone came in to trade in a set of irons, and it was a set of MP37 blades. And I said, and the guy used iron covers. It was crazy. I don't encourage people to use iron covers, but if you're going to trade irons in and I'm going to buy them off you, I'm happy that you use them. And
good point.
I said, I told the guy, I was like, you're not going to get that much value trading them in here. Like, here's the trade-in value. It was like $80. And I said, I asked my boss, very above board, and I said, can I buy these off this guy? I'll give him $200. And the guy was more than happy to take $200. Anyways, long story short, had them for about a year, and then I sold them. And I regretted it ever since. And they had these special little like red ferrules on them. They'd obviously been reshafted at some point. And I sold them on a golf forum, like a local golf forum. And then like 5 years later, 5 or 6 years later, they popped up again for sale.
Come on, same set?
I didn't realize it at the time, and it was the same set because he posted pictures, red ferrules. And he had literally cut the grips off, put extensions in them, never regripped them, and never used them. So I got them back for, I think, $100 or $150 because he just wanted to get rid of them. So I made $50 renting out a set of MP37s for 5 years to somebody, and I still have those irons to this day.
That's awesome. Wow. That is awesome.
Scott,
really?
Go ahead, sorry.
It was crazy. It was just so funny. I said to the guys, like, did you buy these off me like years ago? He said, maybe. I don't know. I said, I bought them off some kid. I was like, yeah, it's probably me.
That is good. I love that.
I still have them to this day. And that's kind of what got me into like the like forged blades and just what I got like really into it. But the one driver that I've owned 3 times, and I promise this time I'm not going to sell it, is the J33 Bridgestone driver.
Nice.
Wow. Yeah. I have a putter behind me right now that I use sparingly. But it was a Scotty Cameron. I always loved the look of the Coronado, but I never could find one. And some guy had it on Kijiji in Brockville. It was about an hour away from me, and I was working at the time. And he had it for a price that was, I think it was like $100 he had it post for. I had no idea what it was worth. And I think I fake sick to leave work and drove up to Brockville.
The addiction is real.
To get this putter. And I love it. I don't necessarily putt that well with it, but it's never leaving. It's just that's my same kind of thing, I guess. Do you have one, Scott?
Yeah, actually, I do. It's almost in line with Ryan. There was a set of blades that I always looked at all the time. I'm very much the same as Ryan. We've talked about it a little bit before. Didn't grow up having, all the latest sets or whatever. And one of the sets that I coveted more in my era was a set of 1979 Dunlop Maxfly Australian blades. They were just, a beautiful set of irons, really nice look to it. And these are the original ones. These are not the, the faux blades that they brought out later on of a different configuration. These are the ones with a really sharp leading edge. It looks like you could shave on, no bounce on the bottom of them. And I always thought they're really cool and wanted to buy a set. And one day I walked into a Play It Again Sports. And even though I had a whole bunch of sets at the time, I had to buy them. And they were above me as far as what I could play, as far as my ability maybe at the time, but I bought them anyways, and I played them for quite some time, and I still own them, and I never got rid of them. So those are the ones that would have gotten away, but I made sure to keep them in my collection.
Now, Ryan, is there something that you're still looking for? Is there one that has got away, but you're still constantly on the hunt for?
Oh, that's funny. Someone asked me that. I do these like question and answers on Instagram all the time, kind of like an ask me anything. And someone asked one time and I was like, I kind of own everything. And then, of course, I made a list of like 15 golf clubs. Old Vokey 200s are always really cool.
Ooh.
Always looking for putters. Like basically any putter that's like cool to me, like old milled, like Cleveland made these Tour Action milled putters, which are like impossible to find in like a gunmetal. Those are really neat. Old fairywoods are kind of fun. I remember I still have SLDR fairywoods that I love.
Those are not old, by the way.
Yeah,
old,
I know.
Old is relative.
I guess those are a couple years old, but I still think that's one of the best radios they ever made. So that's kind of one of those reasons why. Then kind of any old blades, just a sucker for those things. I've owned Hogan's before. A pretty good friend of mine, not to like name drop on here, but like Jeff Sheets taught me how to like he worked at Golfsmith and he was a club designer. He's a club designer, and he actually taught the club building course when I was at Golfsmith back in the day. Like this is like 15 years ago, so I've always kept in contact with him. He designed the 50th anniversary Hogan blades. I've never owned a set of those. I've like held them, I've played around with them, but I've never actually owned a set. So those are kind of ones that I've always
I am
wanted to
so
find. But I
laughing
just
at you back in the day 15 years ago. But anyways, yes, I
yeah.
digress.
I was just a kid. So anyways, but yeah.
yeah, and I went to a
It's
Golfsmith
one
course
of
in 1991 down in Austin, Texas. So that's how old I am. So you weren't even born.
Yeah, I was it was it's pretty cool. Like it was something that was really fun. I think talking to those guys at the time, I think I was the youngest person to ever go through, probably at this point since it doesn't exist. It's kind of a neat little like tag that I have, I guess.
Yep.
Because I was probably the youngest person by like 25 years there. And people were kind of looking at me like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, well, I'm a club nerd and I love to build golf clubs. And it's and I just I'm a, I just want to learn. And it was the only real place to go, and it was a good excuse to like go to Texas in August, which I don't recommend to anybody ever again. But it was just a cool experience. And so because of that, I've always had these little connections to little things that I
That's
just am
cool.
always on the search for.
I love it. I love it. I went and I think I was 21 and it was October. I went down to Austin to that. So I think we have a lot to relate there. I think Stefan's got
Yeah, I was
something
going to
for
say,
you.
I've actually kind of switched my obsession from clubs for a while. I'm trying to find old shoes in good condition,
Ooh,
like old
that's probably
TWs and things like that. That's kind of where I'm switching my focus for a bit. It's a little bit cheaper than,
Reebok pumps.
yeah, I think something cool with spikes on it. Going back to the golf course and golf being rich, the perception of it. It's actually funny on the Golf Channel as we speak. They have the legend of Bagger Vance and all the fancy golf club that you would see, and how this is probably the thought process of many people that are going starting the golf industry, that this is what they expect. But as we talked about earlier, that is not the case. And you're really, talking about golf is for everyone. So that being said, what do you think people need to, what do you think clubs need to start doing to change that and becoming more welcoming?
Well, there's a couple things, and like I've always considered myself, especially now, like recently, like a bit of a golf advocate, because I think that I'm trying so hard to change the perception, and I'm not the only one. There's lots of people out there. You've got guys like Machinella, whose favorite haunting ground is the Winter Park Nine,
Love
just
it.
outside of Orlando.
Yep,
You've
play.
got John Ashworth with Goat Hill Park. Like there's these people, these leaders in the industry that are showing off. So I'm not new to this. I'm not some great leader of this whole like program, but there's people that are out there that are promoting golf that it can be accessible. And I just it bugs me to no end when people say that it's like it's a rich guy sport. And but I get it. I understand the perception. I'm not immune to the idea that like what it represents. I totally get it. Every bad guy in every movie is hitting putts in their office into a shot into a cup, right? It's just they use it as this like trope to show like, oh, this guy is rich and like all this stuff. And I just it's annoying. And the other part of it too is like my wife is a golfer, and I think that social media doesn't do a service a lot of times to women and female golfers. I think it's a real dark spot on something that could be really positive. And as far as courses go, I think like again, I was a member of a muni and it was great. Like King's Forest and Hamilton for an intermediate, so someone under the age of 35 was $1,100. Not to like talk about not they're not paying me to say that. I just loved it. And because for me it was just a place to go play. It gave me access. I could go play in the morning. I could play with random people. I'd go play at night. I'd play 6 holes and go home. It was just a place to go play. And is it perfect? No, it's not perfect. But it's a place to go play, and it's a place to enjoy, and a place to be out there where it's not that. It's actually, unless you're playing at 8 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You go to 6 o'clock at night, it's nobody out there.
But in a
you just go out
sense,
there and hit
though.
Shots.
Yeah, but in a sense, though, you said it's perfect, but then you said it's not perfect, but it was perfect for you. So, I mean,
it's perfect for me. Yeah,
I guess that's
exactly.
The big thing here is that there are different flavors. There are different flavors for everyone, but, you know, those flavors have got to be accessible, right?
Yeah, and I think for the average person to go find, like, go get a membership, it's not completely unreasonable. But I also, and I, this is like, the part that I, the struggle that I have all the time is like, I strive to want to be a member of a country club. I do. I'm not going to sit here and like lie about it. I want to be like, I used to live 5 minutes from Hamilton Golf Country Club. You know how many times I drove by those gates and been like, I want to be a member there so bad.
Yeah.
That golf course is amazing.
Right.
And to be able to have access to that and be able to like have friends that are in the industry now and you can get to play there once or twice a year on an invitation. It's a treat. It's an absolute treat. Everyone's out there saying hi. Everyone knows each other. But when you're out at these country clubs, and it's not to pick on them, I've been at a lot of different other clubs, and I have younger friends who have joined clubs around the GTA and other places, and the membership is older. It is. And a lot of people my age, I'm like the, I kind of call it the lost generation of golfers. A lot of friends that I play golf with don't play anymore. And I don't know if it's because of time or they got out of it. But there's not a lot of 30-year-olds walking around private country clubs. It just doesn't exist. And so, like, where are these places going to get their members from? Is it by attracting them with food and beverage? Because I don't want to pay minimums. I have a lot of restaurant options to go do these things. I'd rather join a club that just has a golf course. Like, and a perfect example of this, and I think we've talked about this and we've gone over this, and I'm not the first person to mention it, the world's favorite 9-hole golf course, Sweden's Cove.
Yep. For sure.
It's a destination golf course in the middle of nowhere. It's 9 holes. It's in good shape. It's affordable. You can play there all day for a very reasonable price. And it's imaginative golf. It can be fun for everybody. And I think that's what golf really needs. And I think every time I look at a golf course, I think about my wife. Because
yeah.
would she enjoy it?
Yep.
Yeah, something I've noticed a lot lately. And I actually notice it you know, when I play with my wife, like I'd rather spend more money and get a course where there's a lot of tee options for her than spend less. And she's basically just playing 10 mm-hmm. yards in front of me each tee, even though she's giving up like 150 off the tee. Right. And I think that's a huge thing is golf's not accessible in that way. And also just to go back on the private club, maybe it's just the private clubs I've been at. Everyone always seems unhappy at private clubs. Like there's always something wrong that day with the course or with the food or, you know, like where I feel like the people like ourselves, I think all of us kind of grew up in the same way of playing golf, just wherever, you know, I think we try to tend to find the positives in those courses because we're not spending a insane amount of money just to play.
I think, you know, you mentioned Winter Park there in Maginella, you know, Rick Young from Score and I and another group, Robert Thompson, David Cox, Luke Alvey, a bunch of different other media guys. We went and played 9 there. Actually, we ended up playing 18 during the PGA show this year. And what, you know, Stefan is saying here and talking about, you know, food service and other things or whatever and not being disappointed. I mean, we were all happy when the food cart pulled up and guy was serving hot dogs and we're just grabbing a beer out of the clubhouse. And at the same time when we're there, there was a whole bunch of members from Summit and a whole bunch of other private clubs and they were having a great time. So I think he's right almost a little bit. You know, if your expectations are a little bit lower, it's easier to be happier rather than having high expectations and then just being disappointed.
Sorry, one more thing I think I want to get your thoughts on, Ryan, is, and I'm actually finding this with a lot of my buddies, is that I think since they're not playing as much because, you know, life gets busy, that, you know, you're not used to playing, you're not used to playing that bad, right? And I think the best way to do that is when you are going out and playing is to have a fun game to play with your friends that you can rib each other on or, you know, something fun that everyone gets involved at some point. So when you're playing with those buddies that, you know, don't get to play at as often anymore and they're just trying to have fun out there, is there a specific game that you tend to go to or anything?
We can do like matches with strokes. That's usually a good one because a person can have like a blow up hole and you lose your one down kind of thing. That's usually the most fun. I think that's part of what's lost. I believe in North American golf is the match, the idea of match play. Everyone wants to play stroke out. And if you go and this is on the opposite end of the spectrum, complaining about munis is like, I always joke with my friends. I said, if you're putting out for nine on a par four, like, just pick up, guys. Like, you're not gonna enter your score. Like, I do it. I'll be the first to admit, like, if I'm out there and it's like I've lost one, you know, I'll drop one near the hazard or whatever and hit a shot up, and you know, if I've whacked it around a few times, like, hey guys, I'm out on this hole, like, whatever. I'm not there to like kill myself over this kind of stuff.
Especially I stopped
if I'm
that double bogey this year. Every double bogey, that's it. If I've hit my double, I'm not hitting another. I'm done there.
And it's really like a North American thing. And this is, I guess I harp on it all the time, is like the North American golf culture is very, very messed up. If like, again, that's a pretty hot take, I guess, but it's a harsh way to say it. But I believe that when you think of like in Scotland or anywhere else where golf is played, it's played as an activity and then you do other things.
100%.
The North American 100%. Ideology is the fact that, oh, you know, I'm out here, I'll take my time, I'll have a business meeting out on the golf course. It's like, no, please, you know what, you do it, but just don't do it in front of me at 9 o'clock in the morning, please. Like,
yeah, you're right. I mean, that perception when you go, well, not a perception, it actually happens when you go to Scotland, Ireland, or whatever you go, it's just a part of the day. It's a part of everyday life. And, you know, you're talking about golf courses there, the Balgove course, which is the shortest course in St. Andrews. It's, you know, less than 1,600 yards for nine holes. And, you know, it's fairly flat. It's got one bunker that you can maybe get in trouble. The turf is firm. You know, my daughter can play. She played it when she was eight. My wife can roll it along the ground. And the kids are all there just playing matches and the same thing. That, you know, they don't have scorecards. They're just saying, oh, one up, two up, you know, one down, whatever. And they just move along and it just becomes part of their day. It's not this massive event. And as a result of it, I like your opinion there in the fact that it's just, you know, it just becomes part of the culture and it's not made to be something different.
Now, I think, like, for me, one of the most, and I've used this reference before, one of the most fun experiences I've ever had on a golf course in my life, beyond playing Cabot Links and Cliffs with my wife and some random people and just being out there and enjoying that amazing experience, was Stanley Park, 18
holes.
Oh,
yeah, the pitch and putt.
Pitch and putt.
Yeah.
I borrowed a golf club.
Free in the winter, by the way.
Yeah, like, so I had friends in the industry and I didn't want to bring golf clubs, so I messaged them. They were just outside of Vancouver and I said, hey, we're coming. We're going to play the Stanley Park. Can I just come by and grab some golf balls off you? Just grab some NXTs or whatever. And he was like, yeah, we got a whole bunch. We use them on the range. So we picked up 6 golf balls. We rented clubs. It was my dad, my wife, my mom, who doesn't swing a golf club, doesn't play golf, hit every shot wearing her purse, and my wife. And 4 of us went out. We played in about an hour and a half. We actually skipped past a group that was playing slow. And remember, we have a complete non-golfer in our group. My mom made a par. How, I don't know. I still don't remember, but I noticed she made it. And I just remember the whole time thinking, like, why is golf not like this all the time?
Yeah.
Like, I know it can't be. I realize that. I'm not some weird person that believes that, yeah, you can put this anywhere, because you can't. But to think that it's in a downtown just offside of one of the largest cities in our country, that you can have a pitch and putt where people hit off mats to these little greens under 100-year-old redwood trees and be gone in an hour and a half. It costs $5. There's kids, there's seniors, there's everybody out there. And it's just fun. And that's the biggest thing that I always talk about, is golf should be fun. You know, it's just a game. Like, it is just a game. And yes, there's lots of social aspects to it, of the private club and the muni and all these different things. But at the end of the day, if you're on a golf course, you should be having fun. And that's what I try and promote. And I always think back to that round at Stanley Park, because it was just, part of it was because, like, it was my family. So, which I've really never done before, like, just play golf with, like, my mom, my dad, and that kind of stuff. But like, to be out there in, like, this beautiful setting and just playing this little game, and then you're done and you move on to the next thing, and you go for dinner, and it's all over. It's this whole big day. But just to have that part of it, I don't know why people can't experience it that way instead of thinking, oh, I have to get dressed up and go to the con. I was wearing jeans and a t-shirt. Who cares? But you don't have to, like, there's not this big, like, romanticism of the game. Like, you don't have to get on the shoes and the spikes and the collar and all this stuff. Just go out and play. And that's what it should be. It doesn't have to be like that all the time. I understand that. But for a lot of people to think about it, it should just be that way. And, you know, be on with the day.
You nailed it 100%. We've been talking about that on this podcast as much as we can. I think golf needs to be more fun, and you've nailed it to a T, but you talk about this quite often. Where can people hear you chat more about golf and your thoughts on it?
So if you, I work for Golf WRX. I'm one of their content contributors. I write pieces almost every day. I have a podcast that goes up. I do videos, like how-to videos, because my background is in club building and fitting. So you can find us on the channel, on the YouTube channel, Golf WRX or Ryan Brath Golf on YouTube. And then there's the On Spec podcast. So if you want to learn about club building, club fitting, I often answer those questions. And then sometimes it deteriorates into tangents about me ranting about golf for 30 minutes. And then I realize that I've gone way over my own time, which is fine because it's a podcast and no one's blinking a red light at me. But that's where it is. So on the Golf WRX radio network, wherever you listen to podcasts, you type WRX, Golf WRX, you will find us. And my show goes out on Mondays. But we have a bunch of great shows from a bunch of great contributors. We cover all types of different spectrums of the game of golf. And we all have a lot of fun doing it because we're just golfers that are really lucky to be able to hang out and talk about golf and work in the industry.
Well, we love it, Ryan. Thank you very much for joining us on the Tee Talk podcast. We'll be checking you out on golfwrx.com. We'll be searching for that one club that got away on the forums, because every time I go on the website, I got to go deep into those forums to see what people are selling. All right, now to our new segment. We're going to call it Birdie or Bogey. It's pretty straightforward. It's kind of a, do you like it? Do you not like it? And you probably heard it on all sorts of renditions all over talk radio at some point or another. But
can we sneak a par in there?
Nope, that's why.
No pars?
You
either got to be Birdie or Bogey.
You either got to love it or you got to hate it, and nothing in between.
Wow.
So we're going to go over some current things. It's just an easier way to go over quick things that happened throughout last week, and we'll give our thoughts whether we think it's a birdie or a bogey. So let's go right off the bat here. I think Kevin Na, we talked about him off the top here, picking up a win. Did you watch a lot of Kevin Na's recoil on his driver swing over the weekend?
I did, and I might have caught a bit of replay video as well of some other recoil swings throughout the season. So do you want me to give it?
So Kevin Na's recoil on his swings, do you give it a birdie or do you give it a bogey?
I give it a birdie. I like the showmanship. I like, it's fun. It's something different, especially when you watch it back in a series of clips. Yeah, awesome. So what do you think?
I love it as well. The reason is because for me, I actually recoil and I can't stop myself. So to see a guy on the PGA Tour do it, that is a birdie for me.
That's just going to make you feel good.
It makes
yourself.
Me feel
All
good.
Right, I like it.
We're going to stick on the Kevin Na train here. Gives a shout out to his caddy. Kenny Harms was wearing the free BioKim hat. We talked about BioKim on the last podcast. 3-year suspension on the PGA Tour of Korea or whatever it's called. I apologize. You know what? It doesn't exist anymore.
And then I heard him say, somebody said Bio Kim. So is it Bio or is it Bio? I don't know.
Whatever. Anyways. We're calling him Bio Kim.
Sure,
free Bio Kim hat. You give that a birdie or a bogey?
Oh, that's a big birdie. I mean, making a statement there. I think Kevin Na has obviously made his point of what he feels about that situation. And that's great. Kenny Harms, you know, supporting another player and obviously, you know, disagreeing with what that sort of decision is. So, yeah, that was fun to see.
I love it. All right. I also, looking at that, that's an easy birdie.
I think so.
I think he was passing the hat around at one point. A couple other guys wearing it. If you give that a bogey, then you just must hate the middle finger. And sometimes it makes sense. And I'm a BioKim guy.
All right.
You know what? I'm gonna say this now. BioKim will get a sponsor's invite next year on the PGA Tour. Mark my words.
All right. Sounds good.
Bryson DeChambeau making history on the tour with a full bag of 14 graphite shafts in all his clubs. Is this a birdie or is it a bogey?
I'm going to make you pick first because I want to hear your opinion on this.
This is a bogey. This is a I have no other way to describe it. It's a wraparound season. I don't think he does this in the middle of the season. I don't think he does this in the FedEx Cup playoffs. I think he does it for Bryson being Bryson, and he wants everyone to look at him. I even have a graphite shaft in my putter. Like, it's a bogey. It's stupid. There's no reason he needs them. He hits the ball high already. I don't like it. I think it's silly. It's maybe the percentage is probably so small on TrackMan, but The scientist is back doing his thing. It's a bogey for me.
Yeah, you know what? You've convinced me over to that side. I was sort of in between, waffling on the fence a little bit, but I'm going to bet right now, just like you just bet about Bio or Bio Kim getting an exemption on the PGA Tour next year, I'm going to bet this doesn't last long for Bryson. So we'll give that a bogey.
I agree. I think it's gone next week. It better be gone next week because it's. I mean, no, he's not even playing for a while. He's getting buff now. He's getting jacked.
That's right. We should have had that in the birdie or bogey segment.
Enough about Bryson. All right, Phil. Last week played a driver out of the fescue. I'm going to go first again. That's a birdie. Phil, being Phil. Phil realized at this point, I'm not winning this tournament. I could have fun here. That's what Phil does best. He likes to have fun. Is it the smart move? Probably not. Did he get a birdie on the hole? I have no idea. But I think it's a birdie. We clearly were watching Phil later in the week because of it. So birdie for Phil.
Yeah, I'll go birdie as well. Yeah, you know what? He was not in this tournament in any way. He did make the cut. And they said he sort of went back and forth whether he was going to hit a hybrid first versus a driver. But yeah, you're right. It's Phil being Phil. Entertainment, give it a whirl. He's got nothing to gain from it, nothing to lose from it, so why not? And it just so happened some real estate guy got it on his Instagram, and that was the only way there was any coverage of it. But I'm sure the people that were there were entertained just watching it and thinking, man, you know what, that's me in there trying to hit that golf ball out of the bush. And hey, yeah, if you want to give that a whirl sometime, go ahead.
I love it. I appreciate Phil and everything he does. I'm going to say this one's probably going to be an easy birdie for us. The PGA Tour announced that they're going to live stream every single shot from every player at the 2020 Players. Do I even need to hear your thoughts? It's a birdie. Yeah. It's an eagle. It's a hole in one. The Players is an awesome tournament. There's guys in the field that, you know, they've won alternate events. They're just getting in and they're playing amongst the best that year. I want to watch those guys every single shot. That is awesome.
Yeah, I think you know, there's going to be 32,000 shots broadcast. Unfortunately, it's, you know, not going to be available to everybody free. It's, you know, there'll be some cost involved with it, but hey, that's fine. It's a tremendous undertaking to be able to do this, but the option to be basically pick out your favorite player, and we've talked about that on the show before.
Yeah,
we talked
dream.
About, you know, being able to watch, you know, Corey Connors or pick another Canadian or whatever and be able to see every single shot that they make. That's the future of television. It really is, and it's the future of golf television. So the opportunity to do that at the Players, especially, we know what certain holes are like at the Players, so the opportunity then to, you know, tune in on your player and see them play that shot, whatever it turns out to be, is a whole lot of fun, I think, for the fans. And I think the PGA Tour is listening in providing that.
Next one here, I think the coach and you is going to have a lot to say on this one. Smiley Kaufman, this poor lad, keeps showing up at tournaments, and he keeps shooting big numbers. I believe, don't quote me on this, I believe he was 84-76 on, I wasn't going to say the weekend because no way.
There's no weekend.
84-76 last week. Is this a birdie or is this a bogey for you?
This is a bogey for me. Like, for him, you know what? This guy got a little too close to the sun his first year. And the only reason he was playing in this tournament was he won it. Mm-hmm. He was five tournaments into his PGA Tour career when he won it several years back. That was his rookie season. I don't know. He got injured. I know that. That was part of it. Kind of lost his way a little bit. But I think, you know what? Golf is a cruel game, but it's a meritocracy. We've talked about that on the show before. We had, you know, Brad Fitch on here talking about it as well. The game will weed you out. And, you know, unfortunately, he's trying to find his way back, but his game is just not there. So, you know, sorry, Smiley. You haven't got the game. You tried to play five events last year as well on the tour and made one cut out of those five. Good luck to him, you know, trying to come back. But certainly I hope the PGA Tour events don't obviously just hand out exemptions for him. He deserved this, I guess, as a past champion to come back and play there. But until your game is good enough to be out there playing on that tour, that spot needs to go to someone else.
Yeah, that's a bogey for me as well. A little plus one to what you've just said. If I'm Smiley Kaufman, I'm faking an injury and I'm going in hiding until I can find my game. He's a likable guy.
Sure.
Everyone who's part of that, whatever Ricky's crew with Jet Jordan and all of them back then. It's kind of a distanced, I think. They never can see him anymore. He's never at the same tournaments.
No.
So that's a bogey.
It's a cruel game. I mean, that's just the way it is. And, to think that you're on top of the game, you could be to a certain point, but, it teaches you pretty quickly where you are as far as your status of your game.
All right, we got two more here, and then we're going to head to the mailbag section later on today. Another new segment, a lot of new segments this week, but two more. Ian Poulter this week is playing in the Italian Open on the European Tour, the same week as the Houston Open, where he could be defending his title. I'm going to go first and going to say this is a bogey.
Ooh.
I think you wanted really badly to get in the Masters last year. You had an amazing week. It was awesome. However, this now there's two guys this week that aren't going to be able to defend their title because the Italian Open, the guy that won last year is in a little bit of trouble with the law right now. With you can look that up yourself, Mr. Olsen over in Europe. So maybe that was his thought process. I'm going to come over here, play the Italian Open. The former champ can't be there, so there'll be a new champion in Italy. I still think it's a bogey. I think he should be playing at the Houston Open. They won last year. He got in that tournament. Show some love to those fans because they were really good to him last year when he was there. And Ian's never really been loved in the States. So that's a bogey for me.
All right. This is one where we're opposing on this one. So I'm going to give it a birdie, and here's why. I understand why you want him in the Houston Open as defending champion, but he needs to be in the Ryder Cup. And the Italian Open is part of the Rolex series. It offers a slightly higher purse than the Houston Open, but it also has valuable points for the Ryder Cup in 2020.
He's getting on the team anyway. They're going to maybe. They always put him on.
Well, he's got to guarantee that because you got to think his schedule of what it's going to look like going forward. He's got to try and get enough starts and get enough points to get in there. And he's got a lot of company. This is also a tournament that he's won twice. He won it in 2000, so it was good to him early in his career.
Bought him a new Ferrari.
Probably, and he won it again in 2002. So it was important to him early in his career. So it's a big win for him. And, so for me, it's a birdie. I'd like to see defending champions be at events, but in this case, it's probably more important for him to play the Italian Open.
All right, our last one and easily the most important one of all.
Oh, my God.
Where'd
you dig this one up?
You're a super hip guy, Scotty. You've probably been following this story.
Definitely.
Cardi B, the superstar R&B, hip-hop, pop star of our generation, has announced that her next album
Careful with the hour.
will be named Tiger Woods. Is this a birdie or a bogey for you?
Oh, clearly a bogey. I mean, you know, I caught it. I heard what she said about him, coming back and all this stuff or whatever. But really, Cardi B, seriously, like delving into golf, first of all, do you think everybody that listens to Cardi B even knows who Tiger Woods is?
Yes.
You sure?
He's the most recognizable athlete of all time.
Okay. How is it relevant to this album?
I'll tell you.
Well, all right.
It's not. It's not relevant to the album at all. All that matters is Tiger Woods is the greatest of all time. You could argue your Jack Nicklaus, and we'll go back and forth. He's the greatest of all time. He deserves to have an album named after him. He deserves to have a movie named after him. He deserves everything. This is her way of praising the man, the myth, the legend of Tiger Woods and naming an album after him. There better be a song about golf on there. I don't even know if she's ever golfed before. It doesn't matter. This is a birdie for me. There better be a song called Birdie on there.
All right. You buy me a copy of this when it breaks. All right.
I will be buying it for your birthday.
All right. Awesome.
And that was the birdie or bogey segment. Well, this week we're trying something new as well. I mentioned off the top, we have a mailbag segment.
We
do. We're going to start doing this every couple of weeks, opening up the mailbag. You sent out a tweet earlier today asking people for questions. I threw one out on my Instagram asking people for questions, and we got some good questions in, and we're going to answer them and see where the conversation goes from here. So this is from the mailbag. All right, our first question from the mailbag is, What is, or sorry, who is the worst player to get paired up with in a round? We probably have a difference of opinion.
Maybe,
on here.
You never know.
So I'll let you go off the top. Your worst player that you get paired up, fear getting paired up with.
You know what? I like to play with a lot of people, but Logo Guy drives me nuts. Ooh. Logo Guy, I've been paired with a million times.
So, what do you mean?
Logo Guy is the guy who has probably a hat with one logo on it from some, high-end club that he wants to proudly say he's played, which is great. You know, that's fine. You've been there. But he makes sure that he goes and gets something logoed, not to support the club, just to show off that he's played there. So he'll have the shirt. He'll have, 20 bag tags. He'll have everything that's on there. And the whole point is to kind of throw it in your face and say, look at me, I've played these golf clubs. Because as far as I'm concerned, it's about the memories of playing those places. So, even when I go to spots that, are really nice and they, slap a bag tag on your bag, they don't necessarily stay on there for me. But Logo Guy is my nightmare.
My nightmare is lack of self-awareness person. And what I mean by that is being fast is not hard. I've been told I'm a very fast player, but it's not because I just get up and hit the ball. I do my calculations. I just do them when I should do them. It's the guy or gal that doesn't realize somebody's behind us, doesn't realize it's their turn, doesn't realize they've been in the woods for 5 minutes, doesn't realize that they're walking through somebody else's line, just not aware. And what that all does is, as I've said, 8 different things. Usually they do all of them. Now that's how things get slow. That's how people are behind us. And then usually that guy or gal is also the person that's like, oh, this person's behind us. Why are they up on our butts? It's like, no, you
it's
are
because of you. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is the worst person. That's the person I hate getting paired up with the most.
There you go.
This one came to your Twitter feed.
Yeah. Gimmies. A guy asked me about gimmies and what I thought about gimmies, what the rule of thumb is and, what the rule of thumb is related to handicap purposes. Example, one of his buddies says he shoots 87, but he took 4 gimmies. Did he actually shoot 91? So what are your thoughts on gimmies and how they relate to people putting in their scores for handicaps if they're taking gimmies?
So for me, I'm very liberal with gimmies.
All right.
I think at the end of the day, we're out here having fun a lot of the times. A lot of my buddies chirp me for it. If you want to take a 6-foot gimme, I don't really care as long as we're not playing for money. If money or food or something's on the line, then let your playing partner give you the gimme. But at the end of the day, if you are taking a gimme by yourself and you're picking up your own ball and that's the score you're putting in your handicap, you have to play the handicap. It's only hurting you when you are playing for money anyway or you're playing in a tournament. So I really don't care. My rule is, if you've putt 2, I don't need to see you putt the 3rd. You know that. I don't. There's no such thing as a 4 putt for me in a round. But yeah, let's just pick her up. If it's within 3 feet, who really cares? It's not that big of a deal.
I mean, that's a good point regarding handicap purposes. Yes, that's who they are hurting is themselves when they go ahead and do that. I just, as far as the gimmies are concerned, if you're going to put that in for a handicap purpose, I'd prefer if you obviously make that putt so it's more legitimate. But, like you said, it's only hurting them. The only other thing would be the person that says, "Ooh, I beat you," when they obviously took 5 or 6 gimmies.
We've all played with that guy, though.
We have. So
and at the end of the day, if that's what makes them sleep better at night, do I really care that they think they beat me when they didn't because I've seen them 4 putt before? No, I don't. I don't really care. We said off top, we're probably going to have a difference of opinion on this one. You've played a lot of tournaments. I play more for fun, but I like to have something on the line for now. I realize I don't care about scoring more, put something on the line. So the whole gimme thing, maybe I'm becoming less liberal with it. But,
well, you know what? Go ahead and play a match anyways and let the other person give it to you, and just do it that way and not worry about it. I think too many people play stroke play and they're trying to grind over those 6-inch putts and 1-foot putts and 2-foot putts anyway. So, be kind to your buddies. Just give them the gimme and move on.
I agree.
All right.
This one was a cool one, and one that everybody might have a little bit of a different answer here. What's the weirdest thing in your golf bag that often comes in handy?
Wow. I had to really think about this when I was kind of looking at it. I mean, I usually carry a fairly small golf bag, so I usually don't have a lot of stuff that's in it. So I had to really think about it. And then the one thing that sort of came to me is the fact that, I always put my keys in my bag, and on my keys is a bottle opener, which I will tell you more times than not, it's not necessarily for alcoholic beverages, but, and sometimes it is, people all of a sudden go, anybody have a bottle opener? And I always have one there on my keychain, and it doesn't matter where I am, it always seems to come in handy, and there's always somebody looking for a bottle opener.
It's funny because I actually have one on my keys too, clearly. I mean, for to draw the picture, we're actually drinking a nice bourbon right now while we're doing the podcast. We
don't need a bottle opener for
that. We don't need a bottle opener, but we don't drink that often, no. Folks. Don't worry about us.
No, it's not something you do on the golf course all the time, but it just happens to be, you know, something that comes in handy. What about you?
I got two things actually that came to mind, and both will go in the direction of the bottle opener. There's always. I'm not going to tell people to do this. There's always people that bring drinks on the golf course that they didn't purchase there. It hurts the golf course you're playing at. Please don't do it. But if that is the case and somebody offers it to me, I'm not going to say no. But what I will do is I will pour it into another container. So that way I'm not frustrating anybody. I always have that extra container to drink out of. But the other thing, it's not that weird. Band-Aids.
I've
never had anybody I've ever played with else have a Band-Aid. It's always everyone else I'm playing with. Hey, does anyone have a Band-Aid? I was looking for my Profi one in the bush, and I got cut all over. So Band-Aids was the first thing I came to.
It's always a stock thing, so I don't even think of it as being weird because you always end up with a blister or someone else needs one on the golf course. Some people need it for their golf game.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's that strange, but I think some people, you're right, might think it's weird.
What's the weirdest thing in your golf bag that you never use?
Oh boy. Weirdest thing in my golf. You know what? I'm going to probably say I've got some practice putting cups that are in there that I
just
think.
Just throw one down on the first hole. You know, you get a breakfast ball? Breakfast putt. So you're going to go putt in one corner.
They're ones that I used when I was doing some caddying and use it for player in a practice round, and you throw them down or whatever like this. But, you know, in normal play, you don't really have or make use of them a lot. So they just happen to be sitting in my bag. And every time I open up my golf bag, I look in there and I see the pouch with them in them and go, why don't I just take that out of my bag? But they seem to just reside in there.
Yeah, I have all my yardage books of things I've caddied for that I'm not going to use.
Leave them in there.
I'm not going to play the Hamilton Golf and Country Club, but if I did, that would come in handy.
Sure.
But I have all these yardage books in there, and they're going to weigh it down. But
I keep the yardage
it's a
books.
Story,
maybe. Yeah, it's a story. I keep the yardage books too, but I don't keep them in my golf bag. Okay. How's that?
I'm the opposite of logo guy. I just pull out yardage books. Oh, I guess we're not at the Greenbrier today. Oh.
Do you just like zip open the zipper and they come tumbling out? And I was a caddy at the Canadian Open and Greenbrier. And is that how it works?
Yeah, pretty much.
All right.
The next one was a really good one as well. The future of private golf. What are your thoughts? Is it sustainable?
Yeah, that was a big topic brought up to a listener down in Arizona. And his concern was the fact that he's got a lot of friends. They're all sort of verging on being 40 years old. And they're looking at their intermediate rates going up to kind of full rates. They like to play a lot of golf, but they're not sure they're going to be able to afford it. So, you know, I don't think private golf is fully going away. There's always going to be people that have the money to be able to sustain it and to be able to keep certain clubs alive. I just don't think there is a market for as many as were built, especially in, you know, when we look at the U.S., how many private clubs were there. You know, there was a big boom in them in the 60s and the 90s. The 90s are the ones that are obviously really of a concern right now. Affordability is going to be very important, you know, for yourself, for your generation, when you start looking at, you know, housing and vehicles and kids and stuff like that. Golf is not priority one, so it's got to be affordable, even though you want to play. And, you know, if those are the future people that are going to be playing at golf clubs, I don't know if as many private clubs are going to be sustainable, and, you know, they're going to have to figure different ways to have a different business model.
Yeah, I agree with you. My thoughts on private golf are, I mean, you can probably find them online somewhere. I've talked about it often. I think the issue with private golf isn't the fact that the course is private. The course being private is an awesome luxury.
Sure.
It's the things such as initiation fees that I find very silly, especially when you're talking to people around my age. Like, I'm at that age where I'm the people you want to have in those, you know, early 30s coming in. We're starting to get to the point in our lives where we're going to be making the most amount of money probably that we ever will in our lives at this time, right?
Right.
Per year. And to be trying to take that from them rather than just bringing them in the club and letting them invest in the club in their own way and different things and lessons, which benefits the game more than just, you know, here's $10,000 for me just to join your golf club that now you're putting into a clubhouse. I don't really care about the clubhouse.
Yeah, so make their investment more optional rather than mandatory. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, right? Like, I don't care about the clubhouse. I don't care about these things. If that's what you want, like, there's a lot of boosters that you have at the club that might care more about those things. And I think there's certain aspects about that. Maybe you have different things. Maybe you're not allowed to use different features. I just think that private golf is just way in an old business model. I think the customer service industry behind it and the way that customer service is going in general is going to more of an experience rather than, you know, the status, which is what which business used to be is like, no, I bought from the Gucci store. I didn't buy from Walmart.
Yep.
Where now everything that all businesses are doing and small business, it's all about giving that experience. Go to the experience, and the experience doesn't need that $10,000 initiation fee. Do it other ways and people will pay for it anyways.
Perfect. I like that take.
This one came from former guest David Byrne from the Big Break.
Oh, interesting.
He wants to know our thoughts on putting with the flag and specifically within 10 feet. He said it's stupid and it shouldn't be allowed. I personally, I'll let you go about putting with the flag in general.
I don't really care. I really don't. Okay. I mean, sometimes I pull the flag out. Depends with the group that I'm with, they want it out or in or whatever the case. My only concern is seeing some of the damage that's happening with the flag being in, people kind of digging the ball out of it. Although we're seeing some clubs are going to the flags with a
genius
cup bottom on it, like genius. You see on the practice green, so that you just pull it out and the golf balls come with it. I think we're going to see more of that coming forward. I've actually seen more people not objecting to having the flag in than I expected. For me, as far as downhill putts, I like to have the flag in, you know, but you know, not if it's windy and the flag is moving around. So I'm really fairly neutral on it, but you know, if anything sort of just moves play along and speed things up, I don't mind it in.
Yeah, I'm going to take a different approach here. It's not that I don't mind it in. I hate the back and forth. I hate, like, hey, let's take it in.
I'll agree. That's a
difficult
thing.
So annoying. And I actually find, and I mean, a couple of them listen to the podcast, and they're going to know exactly who they are. The guys in my groups that want it in never get the ball to the hole anyway. So it's like, why are we leaving it in? Because you never hit it past them. Like, I'm probably a guy that would benefit from leaving it in, because generally if I'm putting well, I'm probably the next guy to go, because I will get it past the hole usually if I'm putting well. I personally just don't like the look of it, of the ball. It's more satisfying watching the ball disappear for me than watching it hit there and just stick. And it's like, does that count? Because it's kind of sticking out of the ground.
So it's more an aesthetic thing for you.
Yeah, but you know what? That tape with the like
cup on the bottom.
Green,
yeah.
That's genius. And yeah. It's going to like help a lot of seniors.
Oh, for sure.
Huge.
I like it for many reasons. Yeah. And like I said, I think we're going to see that happen a lot more. Now that we've
read those stupid things that were on the back of their putters. Remember that thing on the back of the putter and you'd skip the ball? And it'll pull the ball out with your
little
putter.
Suction
throw
caps.
Throw those out. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think what you're going to see now is that we've had a year of this, or almost a year, and then now we're going to be working to a second year. Golf courses are kind of going to look into that, see what's been happening at their club, and then you know, we're probably going to see more of those happen in the next year.
I love it. This next one's an interesting one, and kind of one that I'm going to have to think a little bit about. But maybe, you know, you've watched the game for a long time. And this also came from David Byrne. And he said, who has the easiest life on tour? And I kind of didn't get what he meant by that. So he said, think of a player that makes a ton of money, like every single year, but you never see them in an interview. They never have to do commercials and all those things. So a guy that just kills it year in, year out, he's an ATM, but you know, isn't doing all the
extra
I
see it.
Stuff.
The big media stuff and all the obligations.
I got one for you.
All right. Throw it at me and I'll put my thinking cap on here.
I think his nickname on tour is ATM, Chucky Three Sticks. This guy, every single year makes $3 million.
He does.
He wins every 20 years or something. That's unrealistic. But
that's
an
exaggeration,
he doesn't win often.
Yeah.
This guy's voice could sound like Scooby-Doo, for all I know. I've never heard him speak. I have no idea what he sounds like. A lot of fans in golf, you could probably put them in a crowd of people or in a like a lineup, a you know, criminal lineup, and they wouldn't be able to pick him out because he's not really on TV that often, but he just rakes it in. Looking at the stats right here, he finished 26th on the money list last year, making almost 3.1 mil, yeah. Plus an extra 415,000 for something else. I don't even know what this other something else is, but he made some great money last year, and it sounds like his life is probably pretty easy. What are your thoughts?
Oh my, jeez, it's hard not to think about that. I mean, the other guy you might want to think of is a guy like Chad Campbell. You know, here's a guy who's been a grinder on tour for a long while, made tons of money, got 4 wins on tour. And when I say tons of money, he's in for almost $30 million. Played 486 events in his career, had 56 top 10s. And there's another guy, unless, you know, you're a native Texan and hang around Fort Worth or whatever, you might not know what his voice sounds like.
To be honest with you, I don't even know what he looks like.
There you go. It's exactly it. So it's a perfect other example. But you're right. Those are guys who can go, you know, to the mall, can go anywhere with their family. They're probably not going to get recognized if they're not in golf gear. And as a result of it, they've probably got a pretty good, nice, balanced life.
I agree. This next one's around fashion. It seems that the ladies tour is loosening up on their fashion, and you're seeing more different outfits out there and such. But the men's tour continues to stay the same pants all week. They're now into shorts. It's way stricter. Yeah. Stricter.
It's a good example.
Yeah, Stricker, pretty boring. You know what I'm trying to say there. Yeah. Should they relax on the clothing on the PGA Tour?
Well, I guess that's a matter of what you say is relaxed. I mean, I guess I'd need an example as far as there's guys out there wearing joggers. There's guys
they're getting better.
You know, you're seeing more fashion replicate what happens in real life that's out there. I don't think we're talking about wearing cut off tops or whatever. I don't know what where they're getting to.
Do you think we've gone past pants?
I think so. I mean, I don't think it looks unprofessional. We're not talking about, gym shorts that are, tugging on things. We're talking about, tailored shorts close to the knee or longer or whatever. These are what these guys are wearing in practice rounds anyways. Absolutely. I know for ourselves within the PGA of Canada, we have a little bit more relaxed rules now in wearing shorts. It used to be just because of, heat, for an example, or whatever. You can look professional and still wear shorts. So, yes, if we're really using that as the example and talking about that related to PGA Tour, it's going to look odd at first, just as it has already in practice rounds and people, noting that as far as pitchers and seeing players' legs for the first time and seeing the Cavs show, Phil Mickelson. But you know what? Yeah, I don't think it's that big of a deal. I don't think it looks unprofessional at all.
I don't either. Well, I've walked enough practice rounds on the PGA Tour to know that everyone wears shorts anyway, so it doesn't really matter. The guys that aren't wearing pants probably lost their luggage, like Martin did when we went and played at the Green Parlor. It seemed like the whole group of them lost their luggage on the way down. Different story for different day. But they're all wearing shorts out there. Every single guy. John Daly's wearing shorts out there. Right? Like, it doesn't matter. I think they can loosen up. There would be no harm in having short guys play in shorts in and around. I think it's silly. Let's have some fun with it. Fashion. These guys, they wear shorts. They wear different outfits. Let's mix it up. It's 2020 next year. Let's not go to the old rules of 1912 or whatever.
I hear you.
When they made them. We'll end this on a
odd note.
On an odd note, let's say that.
Do we have to actually name the course?
Yeah, that's what. So we got the question we got was a bad course that you enjoy playing. And we're in the business of golf, and we don't ever want to talk down golf courses. But I mean, I think there's certain golf courses that realize they're not a top tier golf course by any stretch of the imagination. I don't really know how to answer this without naming golf courses and getting myself potentially into some trouble.
I'm trying to think as far as, going and playing certain golf courses that, you're going there for other reasons, just for the experience of being with friends and whatever. And, as a result of it, it's not about the golf course itself. I mean, it's kind of a vessel to, you know, be there as a spot that you go with those friends and enjoy the game. So trying to pin it down to a particular course when it's not really the course itself that's making the difference, that one's hard for me pin down.
I'm not going to name any course. You've all played this type of golf course. My favorite ones are ones in the heat of the summer where they can't really afford to water
concrete.
Everything.
They're concrete.
They're rock hard, but
love
the
it.
Greens are perfect.
Love it.
The only thing they invest in are the greens. Even the tee blocks, they don't really care about because they're like, eh. You know, because at the end of the day, if the greens are bad, everyone thinks the golf course is bad. So if they're like, the last shot you take on a golf course is at the green. If you make that last putt, you're probably feeling good about yourself. So those everything's burnt out. The rough is pretty much non-existent too. Those are what I think they're fun and they're a little bit different.
I might have one here, although I think the golf course disappeared now, but there used to be one in Orlando down in the Kissimmee area called Million Dollar Mulligan of all things.
Okay.
And it was this little pitch and putt golf course. They might've been 40, 50 yard holes. And it was really near a lot of hotels where guys would stay and players, different people would stay when they were at the PGA merchandise show. It was really known for people kind of going over there. They might take a couple of beverages with them or whatever. You take a wedge, one ball, and you go around and you play under the lights. And it's just fun. And it's a crappy golf course. It was probably like $7 to play.
Sweet.
Poor condition. I mean, bunkers that are probably made out of concrete, but it didn't really matter. Again, it lends back to that point I was kind of making. It's the experience of the people that are there, everybody enjoying themselves, getting back to the roots of the game. It's not really about the golf course, and really, you know, the course wasn't that great, which is probably why it's not there anymore.
I love it. Well, that was our mailbag segment for the week. We're just going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with a tip of the week from the coach himself, Scotty McLeod. All right, and another new segment this week. And before we wrap things up, we have our, can't call it Coach's Corner. We'll get sued for that. So we're going to call it, we don't actually have a name, do we?
Tip of the Week?
Tip of the Week.
Yeah, let's sure.
Just, tip of the Week.
That seems
Scotty,
real easy.
You are a CPGA professional, Class A. Professional, something you worked hard on.
We haven't used CPGA in years, by the way. It's
okay.
PGA of Canada.
Oh, sorry. Every time it was that old saying, CPGA.
Can't play golf anymore. Yeah, I know where you're going with that.
Yeah, which isn't true. You can still play. You struggle on the first tee usually, but other than that, you're still a player. But tip of the week, what do you got for the players to kind of wrap up the season? The season's coming to the end. They're just trying to play good. So what do you got for them for the end before things go, before the clubs go in the attic?
Year? Just a quick one. This is based on, you know, doing a lesson the other day. I had a young guy that was in, and, you know, we were kind of looking at his setup a little bit. And when he was set up, his tendency was to put weight towards his heels a lot during his setup, and he didn't really think about it too much. He was sort of counterbalancing having the club in front of him. And what I sort of explained to him is that, you know, setting up and not setting up with sort of the pressure weight in the center of his feet, setting it towards the heel was making him sort of rock a little bit during his swing, which was actually changing the radius of his swing. So
when you say radius, let's simplify that.
So
a little bit.
Yeah, instead of, it's not the, you know, massive word or whatever, but
no,
as far as the length of the club, the length of his arm, basically the distance he is away from the golf club. And so what would basically happen is he would set up with his weight towards his heels and he would rock in the golf swing. He would basically take his backswing, kind of rock forward a little bit, and then when he was taking his downswing, he would actually fall back a little bit. And as a result of it, he'd get a lot of missed strikes towards the toe. So what I basically got him to do was just kind of set up and make sure the pressure was even between the heels and toes. He felt it just kind of under the balls of his feet. Really important, especially this time of year when the ground is soft, fall, we're going to slip a lot, that sort of thing. Knowing that it's very important to hit the golf ball off the center of the face, it is the most important element. So don't neglect your setup. Make sure you set up with that pressure even between the front and back so that you're not rocking back and forth, that you're going to get a little bit better strike and a little bit better shots out of that.
I love it. Thanks for the tip. I'm going to be aware of that when I get out. I'm going to try to get out tomorrow. The weather's been good right now. Courses are still in great condition around here. So if we can keep that kind of mid-teens.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Temperature in the fall. We'll be happy with that. Hope you enjoyed the podcast this week. A lot of new segments. Send us some feedback. You can reach out to us on Instagram at Flagstick, at Flagstick Golf as well, on Twitter. I always get the two mixed up. So if you don't find at Flagstick, try at Flagstick Golf. You'll figure it out. You can reach me on Twitter or Instagram at Steedorf. I'm out there somewhere talking about whatever and whatever. My opinion is not in line with Flagstick, so don't worry about that. Reach out to me. Give us some feedback because we're trying these new segments out. We're going to build some more. We're going to try some new games out each week, and I hope you like them. But we need you to subscribe to the podcast, rate us 5 stars, and tell your friends. Tell your friends that you're enjoying this podcast. Share it on Twitter. Share it on Instagram. Do whatever you can. Hope you get some more golf in this week. And make sure you're walking those putts in like Kevin Na, because that is swaggy. All right, we'll see you next week. Just yesterday,